Clear the Air Radio Drive. Everyone who pledges at least $120 will receive 3 starter plants, basil, tomato, and pepper. The plants will be grown at our farm in Urbana and will be available for pickup on Saturday, April 13th at the Horticulture Club's Mom's Day Flower Show. Go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455 for more information.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. Urbana Mayor Laurel Prussing touts her efforts to boost economic development, saying projects like a road extension and renovations to an old hotel are ways to achieve economic prosperity. But her opponent and political newcomer Lee Stratton has criticized some of these projects as a misuse of taxpayer dollars. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert previews the contentious mayoral primary.
Stratton, a former Urbana Public Works employee, says he first thought of running for mayor just prior to his 2010 retirement, saying he felt too much was being spent on projects he deems less critical.
I'm not against art, but we were putting off things in the Public Works Department that probably should have been addressed at that time. And when you don't address issues, then they get worse.
For example, Stratton says the addition of bike lanes on a number of streets meant maintaining them on top of the road service markings and walking paths Public Works was already in charge of. Even before he turned in his nominating petitions, Stratton had come out criticizing the redevelopment of the Urbana Landmark Hotel. Stratton contends developer Xiao Jin Wan missed a deadline to have the downtown hotel's 128 rooms reopened. 45 are open currently. He contends Wan should have been declared in default of the city's $1.45 million loan, since the city won't earn the $200,000 back that was expected.
But because he's skewed the projections by not being ready with the entire hotel, and no bar, no restaurant, nothing to produce food and beverage tax, very little hotel motel tax, it looks to me that the city's going to lose about $600,000.
But Mayor Laurel Prussing defends Juan's work, saying the contract was modified and extended when renovations called for more work. The mayor says Juan always intended to complete the project in phases.
If you say you want to bring business to Urbana, why would you treat an investor that way and constantly harp on him?
Prussing also believes Stratton's criticism of the hotel project is motivated in part by support he's receiving from former Mayor Todd Satterthwaite, who she defeated in 2005. Prussing contends some of her opponent's plans are identical to what Satterthwaite wanted. Stratton, however, denies the contention that he's serving as a puppet while the former mayor calls the shots.
Todd did not come to me saying that he wanted to help me run a campaign. I went to Todd saying that I was considering running and I don't think that I can run without someone who has political expertise.
Prussing dismissed former chief administrative officer Bruce Walden 5 years ago, now handling much of those duties on her own. She hired Mike Munson as chief of staff in 2009. Stratton says agreements like that of the Landmark Hotel need a second set of eyes and says if elected, he'd name someone to the CAO post. Prussing insists she can handle some of those duties and better.
I can just walk down the hall and talk to the police chief, you know. I don't need a liaison. It's ridiculous. So we're spending less money and we're getting better results.
Stratton has also been critical of plans to extend Olympian Drive to Lincoln Avenue, a $15 million project in an industrial area north of the city. He thinks the focus should be developing business downtown.
If you drive up to where Olympia Road would end today, assuming it was done and was in today, you'd have cornfields, you'd have farms, strictly agriculture on almost all sides. And on the other hand, we have a crumbling Florida Avenue. We have a Green Street that looks like patchwork between Race and Lincoln.
Stratton says Olympian is simply a pipeline to Champaign, but Prussing cites it's been a boon to Urbana's neighboring city in terms of development and says finishing the road in her city will do the same. Prussing says the time she's put into the project goes back to her days on the Illinois House Transportation Committee and Champaign County Board.
If you have spent years getting the funding lined up and, you know, getting the landowners lined up and everything, you don't just drop it and say, let's wait until later because somebody wants to wait until later. You have to act when you have the opportunity.
Prussing also refutes Stratton's claims that local funds were used for the road extension. She says the project relies solely on state and federal dollars. The Les Stratton proposal for economic development suggests using existing funds for private investment. He says that's the opposite of what the mayor has started with the $5 million Boneyard Creek improvement project. Stratton says there's no guaranteed success with that.
If we were to encourage building in the empty spaces in downtown, then we would have at least at the minimum a brand new building, more real estate. They pay real estate taxes. They would pay business taxes. They pay sales taxes. Those are the kind of things that we need in Urbana.
If he loses next week, Stratton says this will have been his only run for public office, but believes he at least helped expose some issues. Whether Prussing is renominated or Stratton gets the nod from local Democrats in next week's primary may come down to voter turnout. Mayor Prussing admits she is concerned about voter ambivalence during this off-year primary election.
I got into politics when I ran for the county board, and I won a Democratic primary by one vote. So if you ask me, you know, is it important? It's critically important for people to show up for a primary because essentially this is the general election, because I've run against Mr. Bradfield before and he didn't seem to do that well.
Mayor Laurel Prussing and Les Stratton, two distinct candidates with two very different views on how to spur economic development. The winner of Tuesday's primary will face Republican Rex Bradfield in the municipal election in April. 4 years ago, Bradfield came in second to Prussing in a four-way race with 32% of the vote. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Chris Berube. Last year, the state of Illinois tried to ban the carrying of concealed weapons in public. However, in December, a three-judge panel ruled that it was unconstitutional to make such a ban. They gave the state 180 days to come up with a new law, and now Attorney General Lisa Madigan is asking for more time. There's no law in sight in the legislature right now. And with March quickly approaching, the question becomes, what's going to happen when the 180 days runs out? Will concealed weapons just be totally legal in Illinois? I decided to seek an expert opinion on this issue.
My name is Brandon Denning. I'm a professor of law at the Cumberland School of Law at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama.
Professor Denning taught at Southern Illinois University for a number of years and is now on the law faculty at Samford University in Alabama. He's helped edit textbooks about gun laws in this country. He says that Illinois is the only state in the union right now without any kind of law regulating the carrying of concealed weapons, and that once the 180 days runs out, without a law, it might de facto legalize all concealed weapons.
If the prohibition was invalidated, and there's no law saying or no mechanism established to provide for licenses, then I suppose that carrying a concealed weapon wouldn't be against the law, as long as you were otherwise permitted to possess a firearm.
Is this kind of a legal gray area, would you say?
Well, it's certainly the Seventh Circuit's decision has created a gap in the law, and I'm sure that the lawmakers don't want to allow that gap to remain for very long. So I'm feel fairly confident that they will come up with something. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any legislation. I mean, they have to do something, and I suspect that what they'll try to do is, you know, comply, you know, minimal compliance, I suspect, is because I don't get the sense that there's much appetite, particularly upstate, for allowing people to do this.
So you mentioned the idea that Illinois might go with some kind of minimal compliance. What would that look like under the Second Amendment?
I'm not sure that shall issue regimes are required. I suspect that Illinois, what they might do is want to say, well, okay, fine. You can apply to the chief of police in your town for a permit. These are the criteria that we're going to establish for granting them. And maybe they make them restrictive. You know, maybe they say, well, you have to have a valid reason for wanting to carry. Let's say that you own a business that handles a lot of cash or that is subject to being robbed or something like that. I suspect that that might be what they try to do, as opposed to just going to a fairly liberal shall issue regime.
Right. Is that, strictly speaking, constitutional to say you need to have a good reason to have this kind of a permit?
Well, nobody knows, you see, because the Supreme Court, obviously, they've just started fashioning constitutional doctrine in this area. There are lots of open questions about what is permitted or is prohibited under the Second Amendment. And I suspect that it's possible, particularly if Illinois decides to do something very restrictive or opts for minimal compliance, you may have the germ of another constitutional challenge that will answer some of those questions.
So the prohibition was invalidated as violating the Second Amendment. Is there any kind of form of prohibition that could work with the Second Amendment? Are there any kind of precedents in the United States that make sense like that?
It's clear that some gun controls are going to be permitted, but things that begin to approach confiscation or prohibition of entire classes of weapons would be probably suspect. The court didn't squarely address, because it wasn't raised in either case, whether concealed carry is mandated now. Now, the Seventh Circuit said that you couldn't prohibit the carrying of concealed weapons completely, but certainly I think it's subject to regulation.
Professor Brandon Denning teaches at the Cumberland School of Law at Samford University. He's authored many legal writings and is the editor of the textbook Gun Control and Gun Rights, A Reader and Guide. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 21st of February, 2013. It's the birthday of Anais Nin, born in Neuilly, France, 1903, studied psychoanalysis, was a patient of Carl Jung at one time, wrote in obscurity for most of her life until her diaries began to be published in 1966, diaries that were written over a period of 60 years. It's the birthday of W.H. Auden, York, England, 1907, son of a physician, went to Oxford on a biology scholarship, switched to English literature. He met poets like Cecil Day Lewis, Stephen Spender, Lewis McNeice, who became his lifelong friends, and just before the start of World War II, emigrated to the United States to teach English. It was on this day in 1925, the first issue of The New Yorker came out, founded by Harold Ross and his wife Jane Grant, a reporter for The New York Times. Ross, the editor-in-chief, until he died in 1951. In the second issue, the editors published an apology for the first one. They said there didn't seem to be much indication of purpose, and we felt sort of naked in our apparent aimlessness. Circulation had dropped to 12,000 by the fall of 1925, but then it started to turn around after Ross hired E.B. White and James Thurber. Gradually, the magazine stopped dropping famous names and developed its own sensibility and style in short fiction and essays. It's the birthday of the novelist David Foster Wallace, born Ithaca, New York, 1962, author of Infinite Jest, which became a bestseller in 1996, even though it was more than 1,000 pages long with 100 pages of footnotes. Wallace battled devastating depression his whole life, committed suicide in 2008,